The Sea and Little Fishes. Legends. Edited Robert Silverberg, HarperCollins Publishers, New York, 1998. Short stories, as I have said, cost me blood. I envy those people who can write one with ease, or at least what looks like ease. I doubt if I've done more than 15 in my life. The Sea and Little Fishes, though, was one of the rare story ideas that just popped up. About 2 weeks later, Bob Silverberg popped up too, and asked if I could write a story for the Legends anthology. I'm not sure what would have happened if he hadn't. It would probably have become the start of a novel or a thread in one. It was originally about 1,000 words longer, containing a scene that did nothing but slow it down, according to Bob. He was right. It was quite a good scene, nevertheless, and turned up later in Carpe Jugulum. The title? Totally made up, but it sounded right. For reasons I can't quite remember now, some years ago I invented the ancient saying, "The big sea does not care which way the little fishes swim," and put it in the mouth of a character. It sounds wise in a slightly stupid kind of way, and I thought it also sounded like the kind of title you got on an award-winning story, in which surmise I turned out to be entirely wrong. Trouble began, and not for the first time, with an apple. There was a bag of them on Granny Weatherwax's bleached and spotless table, red and round, shiny and fruity. If they'd known the future, they should have ticked like bombs. "Keep the lot. Old Opcroft said I could have as many as I wanted," said Nanny Ogg. She gave her sister witch a sidelong glance. "Tasty, a bit wrinkled, but a damn good keeper." "He named an apple after you," said Granny. Each word was an acid drop on the air. "'Cause of my rosy cheeks," said Nanny Ogg, "and I cured his leg for him after he fell off that ladder last year. And I made him up some jollop for his bald head." "It didn't work, though," said Granny. "That wig he wears, that's a terrible thing to see in a man still alive." "But he was pleased I took an interest." Granny Weatherwax didn't take her eyes off the bag. Fruit and vegetables grew famously in the mountains' hot summers and cold winters. Percy Hopcroft was the premier grower, and definitely a keen man when it came to sexual antics among the horticulture with a camel hair brush. "He sells his apple trees all over the place," Nanny Ogg went on. "Funny, eh, to think that pretty soon thousands of people will be having a bite of Nanny Ogg." "Thousands more," said Granny tartly. Nanny's Wild Youth was an open book, although only available in plain covers. "Thank you, Esme." Nanny Ogg looked wistful for a moment, and then opened her mouth in mock concern. "Oh, you ain't jealous, are you, Esme? You ain't begrudging me my little moment in the sun?" "Me? Jealous? Why should I be jealous? It's only an apple. It's not as if it's anything important." "That's what I thought. It's just a little frippery to humour an old lady," said Nanny. "So, how are things with you, then?"
"Fine."
"Fine? Got your winter wood in, have you?"
"Mostly."
"Good," said Nanny.
"Good."
They sat in silence. On the windowpane, a butterfly, awoken by the unseasonable warmth, beat a little tattoo in an effort to reach the September sun.
"Your potatoes? Got them dug, then?" said Nanny.
"Yes."
"We got a good crop of ours this year."
"Good."
"Salted your beans, have you?"
"Yes."
"I expect you're looking forward to the trials next week."
"Yes."
"I expect you've been practising?"
"Nope."
It seemed to Nanny that, despite the sunlight, the shadows were deepening in the corners of the room. The very air itself was growing dark. A witch's cottage gets sensitive to the moods of its occupant. But she plunged on. Fools rush in, but they are laggards compared to little old ladies with nothing left to fear.
"You coming over to dinner on Sunday?"
"What are you having?"
"Pork."
"With apple sauce?"
"Yes."
"No," said Granny.
There was a creaking behind Nanny. The door had swung open. Someone who wasn't a witch would have rationalised this, would have said that, of course, it was only the wind. And Nanny Ogg was quite prepared to go along with this, but would have added, why was it only the wind, and how come the wind had managed to lift the latch?
"Oh, well, "Can't sit here chatting all day," she said, standing up quickly. "Always busy at this time of year, ain't it?"
"Yes."
"So I'll be off then. Goodbye."
The wind blew the door shut again as Nanny hurried off down the path. It occurred to her that just possibly she might have gone a bit too far, but only a bit. The trouble with being a witch, at least the trouble with being a witch as far as some people were concerned, was that you got stuck out here in the country. But that was fine by Nanny. Everything she wanted was out here. Everything she'd ever wanted was here, although in her youth she'd run out of men a few times. Foreign parts were all right to visit, but they weren't really serious. They had interesting new drinks and the grub was fun, but foreign parts was where you went to do what might need to be done, and then you came back here, a place that was real. Nanny Ogg was happy in small places. Of course, she reflected as she crossed the lawn, she didn't have this view out of her window. Nanny lived down in the town, but Granny could look out across the forest and over the plains and all the way to the great round horizon of the Discworld. A view like that, Nanny reasoned, could probably suck your mind right out of your head. They'd told her the world was round and flat, which was common sense, and went through space on the back of four elephants standing on the shell of a turtle, which didn't have to make sense. It was all happening out there somewhere, and it could continue to do so with Nanny's blessing and uninterest so long as she could live in a personal world about 10 miles across, which she carried around with her. But Esme Weatherwax needed more than this little kingdom could contain. She was the other kind of witch. And Nanny saw it as her job to stop Granny Weatherwax getting bored. The business with the apples was petty enough, a spiteful little triumph when you got down to it. But Esme needed something to make every day worthwhile, and if it had to be anger and jealousy, then so be it. Granny would now scheme for some little victory, some tiny humiliation that only the two of them would ever know about, and that'd be that. Nanny was confident that she could deal with her friend in a bad mood, but not when she was bored. A witch who is bored might do anything. People said things like, "We had to make our own amusements in those days," as if this signalled some kind of moral worth, and perhaps it did. But the last thing you wanted a witch to do was get bored and start making her own amusements, because witches sometimes had famously erratic ideas about what was amusing. And Esme was undoubtedly the most powerful witch the mountains had seen for generations. Still, the trials were coming up, and they always set Esme Weatherwax all right for a few weeks. She rose to competition like trout to a fly. Nanny Ogg always looked forward to the witch trials. You got a good day out, and, of course, there was a big bonfire. Whoever heard of a witch trial without a good bonfire afterwards? And afterwards, you could roast potatoes in the ashes.